Reading from the Anchi Lila, 191. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Dvaita Chandra Jai Gaur Bhaktavinda. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Phalena Phalakaranam Anumiyate. By seeing a result, one can understand the cause of that result. Purport. This is a verse in the doctrines of Nyaya or logic. Anchi Lila 192. Swaga paga hema minali ninam nana minalagra buja pajama ananarupam tanarupa ridham kayam nidana di unam adite. The river Ganges flowing in the heavenly planets is full of golden lotus flowers, and we, the residents of those planets, eat the stems of the flowers. Thus we are very beautiful, more so than the inhabitants of any other planet. This is due to the law of cause and effect, for if one eats good food, eats food in the mode of goodness, the mode of goodness increases the beauty of his body. Purport. One's bodily luster and beauty, one's constitution, one's activities, and one's qualities all depend on the law of cause and effect. There are three qualities in material nature. And as stated in the Bhagavad Gita 13:22, Karanam Guna Sango Sya Sarasat Yoni Jantasu. One takes birth in a good or bad family according to his previous association with the qualities of material nature. Therefore, one seriously eager to achieve transcendental perfection, Krishna consciousness, must eat Krishna prasadam. Such food is sattvic or in the material quality of goodness. When offered to Krishna, it becomes transcendental. A Krishna conscious movement distributes Krishna prasadam, and those who eat such transcendental food are sure to become devotees of the Lord. This is a very scientific method, as stated in this verse from Nalat Nishada, Karyam Nadana Di Guna Adite. If in all his activities a person strictly adheres to the mode of goodness, he will certainly develop his dormant Krishna consciousness and also become a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. Unfortunately, at the present moment, the bodily constitution of leaders of society, especially the governmental leaders, are polluted, as described in Srimad Bhagavatam 12.140, Asamskrita Kriyahina Rajasha Tamasa Vrita Prajaste Vakshayishyanti Malecha Rajayan Rajan Yurupinya. Such leaders have no chance to purify their eating. Politicians meet together and exchange good wishes by drinking liquor, which is so polluted and sinful that naturally drunkards and meat eaters develop a degraded mentality in the mode of ignorance. The process of eating in different modes are explained in Bhagavad Gita, where it is stated that those who eat rice, wheat, vegetables, milk products, fruit, and sugar are situated in the elevated qualities of goodness. Therefore, if you want a happy and tranquil political situation, we must select leaders who eat Krishna prasadam. Otherwise, the leaders will eat meat and drink wine, and thus they will be asamskrita, unreformed, and kriyahina, devoid of spiritual behavior. In other words, they will be malechas and yavanas, or men who are unclean in their habits. Through taxation, such men exploit the citizens as much as possible. In this way, they devour the citizens of the state instead of benefiting them. We therefore cannot expect the government to be efficient if it's headed by such unclean malechas and yavanas. Om gyana timarandasya gyananjana shalakaya. My Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manopishtam Napitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Sadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Anshakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripasindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasudeva Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Greetings from New Jersey. I wanted to say greetings from Washington, but I couldn't stay there. I was there this weekend staying with Henry in a program with one lady that I've been preaching to there, who has a center in the middle of Bethesda for meditation. They came back last night. Well, let's get to the text, because somehow going to driving and getting to bed late kind of got me started a little bit late here, and it's a very long purport. But Anchalila, and we were first presented with the real core point of really how we advance in bhakti. We have to be humble and dependent, take shelter. Those qualities evoke mercy. We also made the point is that when you have those qualities, it's not that you just sit and do nothing. It makes you try harder in Krishna consciousness, because you don't have as much confidence in the ahankara, the ability yourself to achieve perfection. You may have qualities, you may have abilities, you may recognize those qualities and abilities, but you don't claim exclusive ownership of them. They're not the only factor in doership. And that's what the materialistic mind thinks, that by my effort, by my power, I can control. So one works hard in Krishna consciousness, but because he doesn't have soul confidence in his effort, that work is an expression of one's heart, which is really the essence of bhakti, which is a humble heart, which knows that he requires the blessings of God, or whatever one has is the blessings of God, whatever inspiration one gets is the blessings of God. And in that humble mood, one takes shelter. And we had that, I thought the nicest example to help you understand this is just the concept of a dog. This way, there was that story of the dog. And how people become very much attached to a dog. because the dog has the quality of taking shelter. The dog is loyal. And somehow a dog is an animal which takes shelter. And just see how much affection that invokes. So when one takes shelter of the proper guide, the proper master, the proper lord, then whatever that person has comes to one. One gets the inheritance. And the inheritance, the wealth, the legacy of a Vaishnav is that Vaishnav's heart. And he gives his heart. He gives shelter, he gives care, he gives his heart, he gives his understandings, he gives his realization. And again, to one whom that Vaishnava can trust, the concept of throwing pearls to a swine is such a valuable thing, but the culture is not there. So as devotees, we have to have the culture. And the culture is that dependence, that surrender, that sacrifice. And if one doesn't have that, the teacher will turn off. Not out of a lack of compassion, but in a very practical way. The pearls cannot be thrown. Why should the pearls be given to someone who will not be able to use them because they're in the mood of enjoyment and control and independence, selfishness? So that's the quality, that quality of heart. More than the quality of discipline, although discipline should be a quality of the heart, out of love, I will work and try to please. But more than the quality of discipline, more than the quality of knowledge, more than the quality of even purity of heart in terms of one's attachments and desires, there are people who are smart, the Brahmins, who are very strict, but they cannot attract the mercy of Krishna because they have no heart. So in that sense, bhakti is very simple. In the simple heart. And the simple heart doesn't mean that you're unintelligent or intelligent, intellectual or not intellectual. We have the example, the dog. Simplicity of heart, you know, take shelter, Shivananda Sena, and all mercy comes. And and Rupa Goswami, who is the most intelligent person, and uses that intelligence to understand Krishna consciousness and surrender to Krishna, gets the full mercy and the full shelter. So this is the core that's holding up this Anchalila. And this is what Prabhupada taught. He taught this core understanding. And therefore, sometimes you can miss his glories, as sometimes people see, questioning the intellectual content or whatever of the writings and the teachings. But it's that sambandh again, that depth of realization. At the depth of that realization is an understanding of who we are, which is hearts of God, particles of consciousness of the Supreme Consciousness, and completely dependent on that Supreme Consciousness. It's just a simple thing in one sense, but it takes a certain strength. Will I surrender to Guru and Krishna? And from that comes empowerment, comes that connection, that link. So, we're now at the part with Rupa Goswami. And this part is coming up. Where Sarup Damodar is saying, you know, Lord Chaitanya is telling about Rupa Goswami. He says, I understood because seeing the result, I can understand the cause of that result. You don't have to tell me that he has your mercy. Look at his composition. Look at the depth of understanding of his composition. He has your mercy. Of course he has. We can see it. This is such an important, simple point of logic. But it's also the basis of Krishna consciousness in a sense. In the Hitta Pradesh, it says our decisions determine our fate. What we are now is a direct result of the decisions we make. Seeing what we're experiencing now, seeing who we are now, one can understand the decisions we made in the past. And if the situation is not to our liking or not to the standard, we should not foolishly make the same decisions that caused our problem. There's a verse in the fifth canto with Bharat Maharaj. Prabhavasthavanabhutajhato. Somehow I remember these verses. How did I remember that? But that the most foolish thing is to solve a problem by executing the cause of that problem. Our problem is due to selfishness and independence and sense gratification. Now we're in a problem. What do we take shelter of? Independence and selfishness and sense gratification. How foolish. You're doing the same things. It's like one has the onset of diabetes, you know, caused by eating too many sugar-producing foods, and he tries to cause it by doing the same thing. So, as we remember the story here with Rupa Goswami, he's empowered in every way, both by the super soul internally, by transcendence appearing in his dream in the form of Satyabhama when he was in Satyabhamapur. It's a nice example of that. I once shared with you the story, what a sadhu in Vrindavan told me about dreams. Some thought I was having, and it was confirmed, said that in the corporal sphere, the bodily sphere, we blocked ourselves off by transcendence, by the attachment to the body. We can't feel transcendence, but sometimes in sleep, where the defenses are down and the consciousness is a little bit more subtle, transcendence, which is inspired for some reason due to our sincerity to give us faith, the pure devotee may appear in the dream. Where we've blocked off that connection in our awakened state, somehow can appear. So Rupa Goswami, very purified, Satyabhama, transcendence, appeared in his dream and told him the essence of Krishna consciousness is that the manifestation of Krishna, Akhila Rasa Mrita Murti, the full embodiment of all rasas, Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of Godhead, in his mood of full manifestation, there is an abode, an environment, a surrounding, which is a manifestation of that desire and a support of that desire. And it's called Vrindavan, a very sweet place that invokes relaxation and intimacy, comfortableness and revelation. Vrindavan. And that in another environment, it's not Krishna, or at least the full revelation of that absolute reality. God is no longer comfortable to fully reveal himself because of the approach and mood of worship of people that are not as spontaneous and intimate. And then another environment manifests. It's called Vaikuntha, or it's called Mathura, or it's called Dwarka. So, this is a very intimate revelation of the absolute reality. Something to really meditate on and think deeply about. This connection between the environment, the surroundings, and the effect it has on our heart. Where do we feel comfortable to be ourselves? One second here, please. Saw that something is going to go out here if I don't plug something in. Excuse me. Okay. So this is a very intimate revelation of the absolute truth, just as certain facets of ourselves are only revealed at home, not in the public, not at work. People at work, people in the public, especially for a boss, especially that position of authority, a public position. Certain aspects of ourselves will be misunderstood and therefore will not be beneficial to either my heart or the hearts of others, and therefore to satisfy those relationships, I won't reveal that. But another environment at home, all the intimate and non-grandiose aspects of our personality can be revealed, which are appreciated and nourished those who have a very intimate relationship with us. So this type of concept was a type of idea of the absolute reality. And what is the nature of the absolute reality in that desire to be himself? What is the environment that is a product of that desire for God to be himself, which in a transcendental way supports that desire of God to be himself? That's revealed to Srila Rupa Goswami. We came to the part where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu tells him that directly, confirms it, and also confirms who Rupa Goswami is, because you don't reveal your heart to just anyone. The most beautiful and most intimate sides of yourself are only beneficial and can be appreciated by those who have the most love. So, what happens here, and we leap into that part, that Narathiyatra, which is an expression of the most intimate side of Krishna. And Rupa Goswami being in that understanding I don't want to repeat, because I know a lot, most of you are here every week, but we did discuss that point of the necessity in the nurturing of love to have the appropriate expressions of that love in terms of drama and poetic song. And how Lord Chaitanya, in his deep internal desire to experience the love of Srimati Radharani and separation from Krishna at Kurukshetra, found strong necessity, strong impulse to nurture his sentiment, that sentiment, but could not find any song or story or poem to help nurture and relieve those deep sentiments in his heart. And therefore drew upon those sentiments from a poem whose context was mundane. But the sentiments of a lover being in separation from her lover, meeting the lover, being separation of the intimacy of that person and the expressions of intimacy of that person in the more simple environment of one's youth. So, where others could not understand Lord Chaitanya because the context was mundane and they couldn't understand where those expressions of sentiment were appropriately applied in Lord Chaitanya's internal life. But Rupa Goswami understood that. And therefore, he wrote a poem also in the proper context. And we're up to the part of the story where Lord Chaitanya sees that poem, where Rupa Goswami had placed those sentiments of one longing in separation for the meeting of one's lover in a more intimate setting in the days of one's youth, which is the feelings of Srimati Radharani at Kurukshetra. And remember, the core of Anchalila, which we are discussing, is Radharani's, Srimati Radharani's, Sri Radha's height of love expressed in the mood of separation. Or the height of love, which is found in the expressions of separation, which were so profoundly expressed by Sri Radha meeting Krishna after 96 years at Kurukshetra, when he is a king surrounded by his retinue, and therefore inhibited to express his intimate romantic side as the lover of Sri Radha. And the depth of separation and union and the swell of intense love in her heart and the sweetness of that love and the joy of that love even in the pain of viparlumba or separation. And Lord Chaitanya is hankering for that, as Radha was hankering. Lord Chaitanya was hankering for that mood. I want to express and experience that. And that's the essence of Braja Bhakti. That one hears about these things, hears about a particular sentiment of love, and that becomes one's most intense objective in life. What I want is love of Godhead. And what I want is love of Godhead in that mood and that height of separate feelings. And this is how it develops, by hearing about these things and having some inherent attraction for them until it becomes a rasa, an overwhelming experience. Till it becomes rag. Till our consciousness becomes colored by those sentiments. It's like if glasses are tinted red, rag, they have a color. Then you see things as red. So the concept here is when one develops love of Godhead, and if one develops Braja Bhakti, the love of Godhead in that mood, then those sentiments color one's heart. Just as if one has tragedy, everything becomes black. If one is depressed, everything becomes black. If one's in ecstasy and jubilant, everything becomes jubilant. If one is fearful, everything becomes fearful. Like Kamsa, he was overwhelmed with fear that the eighth son of my sister will kill me, and now he's been born someplace and he couldn't sleep. So this is Anchalila. This is the culmination of the Lord Chaitanya's quest to become a devotee. So Rupa Goswami understands that depth. And therefore, the conclusion is, I see the result in the expressions of his poetry and the depth of understanding of the heart of God. And therefore, the understanding is, he must have been an object of mercy. To have understood the heart of God so deeply. It's not an intellectual thing. It's not a product of scholarship. You can't understand someone just by scholarship, by analysis. It can take you so far. To understand someone, it requires that that someone gives himself to you. So now they see, you got that mercy. Then the question is, if that's the result, mercy, what's the cause of the mercy? It's that humility. It's that dependence. That selflessness, which is expressed in service, which is an expression of the desire and the value and the faith and the appreciation in being a servant of God as the topmost objective, which is running contrary to the present material consciousness, where you tend to look at the world according to your desire and therefore want to control the world and move the world according to your desire, without the consideration of others. Kind of a pet peeve of mine. When I see people are not aware, considerate of others. Yeah, just a small example just like that. You know, we did this program in Washington. And it was kind of nice and kind of a little bit different here. I mean, it started out to be a little bit of an exclusive program, which is fine. It just started about 3-4 years ago. I was preaching in Washington and spoke on the psychology, yoga psychology, and one young man came up to me after the class, liked the class, said, I'm studying for my PhD. I think my professor would be interested in what you're doing. Can I have her contact you? I said, sure. Then she contacted me, and she came to see me. I was staying at Henry's house, and we developed a kind of a friendship. And she had some regard and organized some programs for me. So this time we organized that at their place that Radhanath Swami would speak. And it was nice. And I was Henry, and Henry brought some of his friends. It was a very nice. Even I spoke to Radhanath Swami yesterday. He said it was a really wonderful audience. Established, educated people. And the lady herself is a professor of psychology and brain science, and her husband is a criminal lawyer in Washington, And so this is kind of something new for part of that crowd. And Ramnath Swami spoke. It was set up very, very nicely. These people know how to do a proper event nicely. And then after the event, we were all milling around. And, you know, it kind of got a little bit late. And then the lady and her husband, who are, you know, she's a doctor, he's a big, you know, they started folding up all the chairs. You know, and had to clean up the room. So I've kind of started to help. But I saw that people, you know, of course, many people didn't see that they started to do that. So I saw that people didn't see that, just, you know, why not help them? We sometimes become absorbed in our own world and forget to be considerate for these people who organize such a nice program and put themselves out and extended themselves. Anyway, having to move to that position. Now, before I finish the class today, now I just want to get into this point that Prabhupada made here, which is the result of prasadam and one's beauty. And that the result of prasadam and eating sattvic food and one's consciousness and one's beauty and one's... So, of course, someone could say, wait a second, I know someone's been eating prasadam for, you know, so many years, and they're a terrible leader, or someone, you know, whatever. But first of all, it is a fact that there's such an effect on the quality of what we eat and our consciousness and our health and our beauty. It is a fact. I see that myself very, very clearly. The only thing that you shouldn't be confused is that's the only thing that has effect on these things. It has a substantial effect, but it's not that you just eat whatever you, prasadam you want, as much as you want, and, and you're a great leader and you're a beautiful person. There are other factors involved. But all things being equal, it's extremely important. And I you know, you see the difference if someone is just, you know, abusing themselves and the fact, you see that. And when, especially when people get old, if their lifestyle, they may have been beautiful when they're young, but if they're not eating the proper food, I mean, really, people become distorted and you know, grotesque, actually, even. And the same thing with consciousness. It so many things are transferred through food, including the consciousness of one who cooks that food. It's not only the quality of what you eat, it's the quality of the consciousness of one who prepares that. So it's such an important factor in our personal spiritual lives to eat Krishna prasadam. And one is unfortunate if that's all that one eats, meaning food that's offered with love and devotion and honored with love and devotion. It will have a profound effect on the consciousness. If you do it, and if you don't, it'll have a profound effect on consciousness. Okay, are there any questions? Oh, no one can ask questions because it's in presentation mode. 1 second.
Say hi.
One second. Okay, questions?
Maharaj?
Yeah, Mooney, how you go?
Maharaj, Dandavat Pranams. Oh, sorry. If someone else has something, I could wait, Maharaj.
No, go ahead, Mahamay.
All right. Thanks, Gil. As I know I say this often, Maharaj, but thanks for a really wonderful and inspiring class. I mean that.
Thank you.
Maharaj, I wanted to ask you a question about something you had said earlier in the class, but I think it related to much of what you said. And it's about sambandhagyana, knowledge of our relationship. I've often found myself a little bit confused by the idea, because it seems more or less like theoretical knowledge, sambandhagyana, kind of like, you know, internalizing or just getting a grasp of the actual metaphysics of reality, God, us, the world, and all that stuff. And yet Bhaktivinoda Thakur says if you have sambandhagyana, that's what you need to chant the pure name. And so, but there's something you said in class that I feel like something clicked. And I want to, may I put it before you and see if you think this is the right understanding?
Yeah.
All right. So, recently I read a really interesting study of Plato where the person studying it, Plato says that the difference between being a good person and a bad person often has to do with the knowledge you have of what's right. And it seems very theoretical, but the person made an argument that Plato's idea of knowledge is not just theoretical, it also has a kind of affective component. And here's the example that, like, I might say I know it's wrong to be an adulterer, but if I'm not sensitive to the fact that people will be harmed if I were to do it, you know, there's people who'll say it's wrong to cheat on your spouse, but they'll do it. And the idea is that knowledge is not just theoretical, it means a sensitivity to the kind of harms or goods that'll be produced by what you do. So even if I can say I believe something's the case, if I'm not sensitive, in an almost, you could say, like an emotional or affective way, if I'm not sensitive to the actual ways that people would be affected by what I do, then I don't really know. And I was wondering if you could take this same, because you were tying sambandhagyana into a sense of dependence on God and a sense of gratitude and humility. And I was wondering if, you know, do you think we can say that sambandhagyana, although it has a very deep theoretical component, there's also this idea that sambandhagyana, for it to be complete, is not just theoretical, but it means a kind of, it, like, this knowledge informs your sensitivities in a certain way. Does that make sense where I'm going with this, Maharaj?
It does. And let me see if what I'm going to say connects with it. The first thing I think of is, and I remember this so vividly, and I said it so many times, is when I invited the Sanskrit students from the Bhaktivedanta Sanskrit, you know, their school's called, but in Govardhan. And then I invited Dr. Fakir Mohan to give, a talk and give the class of my Puri retreat. And then he looked at those students, knowing they were Sanskrit students, and said, who is Shastra? Yeah, who knows Shastra? You know, and then it was so animated, and it's like his hand came forward, and he said, one who practices. So there's a question of a depth of realization, but it has to begin with a theoretical understanding, but it doesn't end with a theoretical understanding. In other words, if you don't know, if you don't know, you're not the body, right? You know, you don't have that understanding, and you just act according to bodily impulses, you know. Or let me give it a better one, in one sense. Okay, if you don't know that the soul is different than God, right? Or you think you are God, which is a basic component of some Bundigan, then where's the question of becoming God's servant, and where's the question of realizing it? But just theoretically understanding it, right, is just the beginning. It's the application that gives you the real depth of understanding. You know, it's same thing. You're not the body. That's okay, that's part of some Bundigan. But if you don't have discipline, you know it. But how deep do you know it if you act on the bodily platform? For example, you know, there's a lot of knowledge in the Shastra about the benefits of celibacy, or let's say restriction in relationship to sex life on one degree or another. Because if it's not controlled, right, it will lead to a bodily conception of life. You know, whether it's with Dharma Varute Bhuteshu Kamas Vibhadatashaba, or, you know, Yogi Voka and what is celibacy. But you may have that understanding, but how much is the depth of your understanding, right? You know, if you still meditate on sex life, if you still fantasize, you know, if you still look at women in a particular way. So how there's a kind of, I guess there's gyan and vigyan. There's a depth of realization. So I think in reference to what you were saying, you know, there has to be it's kind of beyond the intellect. I understand this. It's kind of, I see it, you know. And then when it comes to the point of I see it, it's actually I feel it. You know, it becomes so incorporated in the core of your heart, you know, to the understanding that this is wrong, to the fact that it abhors you, right? So one may say, you know, it's wrong to, you know, for someone to, you know, exploit a woman, right? You know, it's wrong. But you're still attracted to do it, and it still looks good to you, you know? And so how much knowledge is that? You're right. Until it comes to the point that you see that and you're abhorred by what's wrong, you actually get a distaste for what's wrong, then I think it's a question of how deep you understand it. Mooney, would you like, I don't know, are we connecting? Or
I think I appreciate the way you framed it. It seems to me, I mean, I feel like on one hand we overvalue philosophy, but we also undervalue it because we don't really understand what it's best suited to do. It seems to me like when I read, for example, the philosopher Ramanuja, you know, the great,
yeah,
you know, when I read his Bhagavad Gita commentary, on one hand, you know, he's an incredible thinker and he's doing very, you know, he's making clear his arguments for the way the world relates to God. But on the other hand, when you read it slowly and thoughtfully, it really is a kind of meditation, you know, it kind of goes deeper. And it's not just a matter of kind of sorting out what are the right things to believe, but it becomes a kind of joyful meditation on reality. And so it's kind of funny how, you know, we're bhaktas in our sampradaya. So on one hand, we're like, well, come on, don't waste your time and all this stuff. But on the other hand, the people who wrote the CC, they were all like first-rate thinkers. Like, for example, you quoted a book from the, you, like today you quoted a verse from the Nyaya Shastra, you know, on how inference works. All these people who are writing our shastras, they knew all this stuff. And somehow or other, it wasn't seen as external to their reflection on God. They just take it up into it. So I guess it's also just been interesting thinking through what you've said. It's not only a matter of knowledge, but of like the kind of role of our intellectual lives. How do we incorporate that into our life as aspiring bhaktas? Well, it seems to me that your point is not that we should discount it as much as put it in the place where it's supposed to serve our kind of transformation and not become another vehicle for, you know, our ego or something. Is that correct?
I think that's exactly it. I'd say another thing, just the point of Bhaktivinoda Thakur relating some Sambandhigyan metaphysical knowledge to a feeling of love of God does both. What it does is it makes the intellectual foundation, the basic philosophical understanding, as a necessity for the feeling, right? But it also puts the intellectual understanding as insufficient in having the feeling. You know, it's not a goal in itself, but it's directly connected to the goal. So, in other words, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that Sambandhigyan, this metaphysical understanding and the depth of it by our application, kind of morphs into our relationship with God. And you really can't have a feeling. Because Sambandhigyan means what? It's knowledge of our relationship of God. What's knowledge of our relationship of God? It's not just that I am a servant of God. It's I am a friend of God, or I am a lover of God. And you can't have that understanding or that knowledge about yourself unless a feeling arises within your heart. But it begins with a core understanding. And if you don't have that core understanding, and again, it's not a depth of scholarship, it's some basic philosophical points that are applied and supported by a depth of scholarship and understanding, maybe from someone else who doesn't have it, who has that understanding. You know, you're not the body. For example, we're trying to understand we're not the body. And that means we want to come to the platform of actually internalizing that knowledge. But we're hearing so many things from Prabhupada from so many different ways. Anyway, I think one other thing that you said last week too is, and I've been reflecting on, you know, what is it? Philosophy. I think philosophy means understanding tradition, and thinking means reflecting on it.
That great line from Confucius where he said learning without thinking. So learning here means just being taught the tradition, and thinking means reflecting on it, basically, and meditating on it. Learning without thinking. Let me say it again. Thinking. Wait, stop. Sorry. Learning without thinking will lead to confusion. Will lead to confusion. Yeah, and thinking learning without learning.
Good.
Learning, which means internalizing the tradition, without thinking, which means reflecting and meditating on it, learning without thinking will lead to confusion. But thinking, just like reflection, without learning will lead to great peril. So the idea is, on one hand, you have to internalize tradition and just take it in. But on the other hand, you have to think about it and meditate on it. And if you neglect either side, you'll either be confused in how you apply tradition, or you won't have the guidance of tradition to lead your thought, and your mind will just go anywhere eventually. Something like that.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else?
Thanks. No, Gail's been so patient and a good friend, so
okay.
I feel
Gail.
Bad. Thanks, Gail.
Sarangi? Garangi, you have a question?
I do, but I actually kind of have to go now, so maybe I can email. Okay.
Okay.
But thank you.
Okay.
Hi.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hello, Maharaj.
Who's that?
Chaitanya Priya.
Hare Krishna, Chaitanya Priya. Thank you. Good. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna,
Maharaj. Hare Krishna. I heard Carl and Stella and Govindan Bhakti. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Thank you so much. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. We can enter now. Thank you. Vanchakalpa through Gishaka Pasindavi.